I lost my glasses in an exotic, cool way. I was in a mall in Norwich seeing Harry Potter and left my glasses in the bathroom. So I went back there a week later and they didn't have them. But still, you know, I mean, if you're going to lose your glasses somewhere, it should be somewhere that's cool. But the bad thing is I can't see very far. I can't see people. And I also wanted to say that I got scared last night. Like, I'm not afraid to speak in public. But last night when I was trying to sleep, can you guys hear me okay? Is this fine? It was a little tinny. Louder? Ah. If you guys want to yell or wave, if I forget and I wind down quiet, let me know. And I realized what I was afraid of is all the people. I'm afraid I won't recognize people I met before, and I'm afraid that I'll meet somebody today, and then tomorrow you'll change clothes or your hair, and I won't recognize you, and I'm embarrassed about that. So I'm not good with names and faces, and I'm getting old, so I'm really sorry about that. So if I look at you really blankly, and I should know you, give me a break, because I'm old. Thank you. I do have those books, and it's yellow, so if you see it from a distance, it's about that thick, and it's yellow. Holly did the cover, and we will have a pile of them out tonight at the family fair. Also, Pam Cerucci and I will be braiding hair. We've done this at some conferences before. We hadn't done it for a long time. So come by and watch, or we'll braid your hair if you want. You can learn some tricks. We can add yarn to it. It's kind of like the Mexican dancers add red ribbons, and you can tie it up and do tricks with it. And I also have copies of Moving a Puddle, and I have some thinking sticks. My family's here. Well, she already... I'm going through this going up. She said that. If you have not met any of my kids or my husband, try to find them and talk to one of them. It doesn't matter which one. They're all pretty cool. Although Marty's the best. I don't have favorites except Marty, but... I think the reason this is being recorded. Hi, Kirby. Hi, Holly. They know. You know, I always liked when parents lie and say they don't have a favorite. Because my sister and I knew my mom liked her best and my dad liked me best. So, you know, we knew the truth of the matter, and then we knew that they were lying about it. So I thought, okay, I won't do that. If I do end up with a favorite kid, I'll just admit it and then weasel out of it somehow. And I like Kirby, so here's my official word with my kids. I like Kirby because he was the first one, and he's the one who made me a mom. So every time it's Kirby's birthday, that's my anniversary of motherhood. I like Holly because she's a girl, and that's awesome. And she's the youngest, so she gets to stay around a really long time, I thought. And the little traitor is moving away. But Marty is kind of a genetic copy of my husband. Only he didn't have my husband's mom, he had me. So he's like Keith, if Keith hadn't been wounded, if Keith hadn't gone to school, if Keith hadn't been bullied or a little fat kid at school, if Keith hadn't been the youngest of three boys and the older two were mean and then joined the military when Keith didn't, and so the dad could always say, why didn't you do like your brothers did? So all of the things that make Keith cringe a little bit or shy or whatever, Marty didn't have. So he's the new improved Keith. How could I not love him? But anyway, when you meet him, you might think about that. Keith is kind of fun, too, but he's an introvert, so if he disappears for a few hours, it's just that he's hiding in the room. He'll come back out. That's kind of like we say about our cat. No, she'll come back out after a while. So will Keith. And I'm thinking, I have the fears of not of speaking with a microphone. I got over that. But I'm afraid of not recognizing people, and I know what people are afraid of when they hear me speak, at least if they've read my writing before, because I've heard it a lot of times. People are tell me that they are surprised I'm not taller, they're surprised I'm not blonde, and they're surprised that I was funny. So I guess I write tall and blonde and mean. Jill Palmer lives in Fort Collins, Colorado, and she was in a chat the other day, and we weren't talking about this conference or California at all. We were talking about kids being more tolerant than the parents are about things like same-sex marriage and... Uh-oh, that's Holly, my daughter.
Hi, guys.
Yeah, I was just joking about Marty.
I was there.
Yeah. Holly's the baby. Then that's the closest to a baby I have. She's big. So Jill we were talking about kids having gone to lesbian weddings and stuff like that. You know, the chat just sort of went that direction, and about how when Holly was little, we had homeschoolers over at the house one time. They had gotten all of My Little Ponies out in the den, and so all the kids have a little family of ponies, and they're setting up, here's my house, here's my house. And somebody, I was just passing through the room, and one of the kids said, well, they can't have babies because they're both boys. And whichever kid had chosen these two ponies said, well, they could adopt. And the other kids went, oh, yeah. And I, you know, I kept walking, but I thought, that's so cool. So we're talking about that, and Jill said that they pulled up behind a car one time and realized that the people in front were making out. Then they realized they were both men. And she said that her kids were just really cool about it, and that they thought it was sweet, and it was in front of Extraordinary Desserts in San Diego. So I said, okay, I got to quote this. What, is it one of those, is it like a gay dessert place?
No, that's a really good dessert place.
Oh, a really good dessert place. So, so I like that story because for Jill, that's part of her connections with San Diego. My own are just that Nancy Wooten, who's one of the people who used to write on AOL, homeschooling and on unschooling.com, is from San Diego. And one time I had come out here to speak at a little Long Beach conference, and she gave me a ride to my uncle's house because my dad's youngest brother, who was always my favorite uncle, lived in San Diego. So for San Diego, I don't have much. I have that Liam McClure was here in the Marines, and he's one of the unschoolers. Liam is the kid who's famous on the reading pages for not reading till he was 15 and then reading novel a day or so. You know, he just went straight to the adventure novels. Now, after this weekend, I will have, and then there was that conference. So each of us has our own little set of memories or associations with San Diego or with each person. You know, I think of Crystal as the person who took Holly out to do girly makeup stuff. You know, I mean, I remember her blogs and the pictures of her yard flooded. So that's my deal with Crystal. When my dad died, my sister was complaining about the way I had talked about him. And she said, well, you said he was this and this and this. And I said, yeah, my dad was. I don't know about your dad. Because the relationship between me and my dad was me and my dad. And she had a different relationship with him, and that's fine. So one of the worst arguments to have with people is to argue about how San Diego is, or how your dad is, or how Crystal is, or what, you know, anyone, don't settle on one thing and go, no, that dog's mean, no, that dog stinks. Because maybe the dog just doesn't like you. It could be personal on the part of the dog. So be flexible about how you describe things or define things, because it just may not be the same for someone else. Some music that you think is the greatest music in the world, if it's the greatest music in your world, that's yours. You can name it the way you see it. But don't try to tell your kids they have to like it because it's the greatest thing. I have counseled people in Medieval Studies Club that I'm in, and the Society for Creative Anachronism over the years, and one thing that we've seen is the idea of preparing for your unseen future. What you do when you're young, or when you first join a group, or when you first come to unschooling, or whatever, what you do, the choices you make, the things that you focus on may seem at the time that they're just of the moment. But years down the line, you look back, and in hindsight, you see how you came to the place you are. So whatever you're doing now is preparing for something in 5 or 10 years, but you don't know it yet. Nobody knows. It's not like you should be able to figure out how to know. It's that no one knows. So the things that you do now prepare you for the future. When I was in first grade, I wanted to be a teacher because I really liked my first grade teacher. And so I decided I wanted to be a teacher, and that's what I wanted. The only backup plans I ever had were I wanted to be a missionary or write for a magazine. And I've done all those. I kind of do that now. I mean, I kind of have this missionary website about how people learn. So Jeff this morning said something about that your passions don't always lead where you thought they were going to go. But all of the things that I ever learned or did or looked at in any of those fields, like helping make people's lives better, giving them information they need, I do that. Nobody hired me and gave me money lately, but you know, that's, but I have books for sale tonight. Holly's interested in art. She's always done artsy things, and she has indirectly, you know, not like directly. She doesn't sell Shrinky Dinks for a living, although she did have an offer that any Shrinky Dinks she makes, they'll sell at a gallery in Silver City. She has, though, done jobs that where her artistic sensibilities were valued. She's worked at a flower shop, and she's worked at a clothing store, and she's done websites. And she didn't, if she had said, I want to work at a flower shop, Mom, so you have the responsibility to prepare me for this thing that I've declared that I want, I wouldn't have known how to do that. But it did help her get an in for a temporary little, can my daughter come help you out at Mother's Day and prom at the flower shop? And then they would have kept her forever. They liked her a lot. But she's moving. Marty is very shy. He wanted to be a policeman. He's interested in the Middle Ages. He made boots for a while. He talks about being an engineer because he wants to make things. I haven't really discussed with him the fact that there are a lot of things you can make without getting an engineering degree. But when Marty has a job, they like him. They trust him. They give him the keys to the front door very early on, even though he's young. Is Jeff here? Because I had a story about ice skating. I'll tell him later. Kirby is well prepared for his job from just having made choices about games. From the time he was really little, he got his first Nintendo when he was 5. And he has ended up being involved in all kinds of gaming and Pokemon League, and that got him a job, and he's worked tournaments and run gaming rooms at NandesuCon and at homeschooling conferences, and what's the thing called in Albuquerque, the science fiction thing?
Bubonicon.
Thank you, I'm Bubonicon. And so because people trusted him with their stuff, he would run the anime room or whatever. They'd just say, okay, here, Kirby, and leave him with responsibility from the time he was little, and that builds up. It made him a man. Honestly, it made him a man because they treated him like a man. They didn't say, well, no, you can't do this because you're only 15 or you're only 14. When I was Kirby's age, I was teaching, and I was taking care of kids who were not my own children. I was sort of a stepmother-ish, some orphan kids that I had known since they were really little, and I was had custody. So it's harsh for me to think of the kind of responsibilities I had, but I was not as prepared. If they were in the situations I was in then, would have done better than I did. Because I was so wounded by school, I was still waiting for somebody to tell me how to do it. It's like, tell me what I have to do, not tell me what I could do. I didn't have that sort of expansive, what are all the creative things in the whole world that we could do? It's like, what do we have to do? But they're all looking at me and I have to do it by the book, I have to do it right. And my kids don't even think that way. I don't think they have it in them to have those kinds of thoughts. When you're in school, a lot of things are worthless and stupid. It's the way of school. You can be reading a book that is a waste of time. They'll take it away from you. They might throw it away. You can be playing with a toy that's stupid to have. It's too young for you. You're too old to have a toy, and they take it away from you. You can have a hobby that they all say is stupid. You can ask a question that's stupid because it's not going to be on the test. Or it's stupid because they told you that last year. Or it's stupid because they're not going to do that till next year. And I think kids can only hear that's stupid so many times before they totally internalize it to you're stupid. And a lot of people get grown and have kids, and they're full of little voices of people whose names they don't even remember going, well, that's stupid. You like that? That's stupid. You watch that? You listen to that? You eat that? But if your kids haven't heard that's stupid, they don't feel stupid. They feel like whatever they like and eat and watch and read is great. And it is. So one thing that new unschoolers need to work on a little bit is overcoming their own damage. Sometimes it's worth going to therapy. Sometimes it's just worth going and paying somebody to let you dump it there so you don't dump it on your friends and relatives. Sometimes just knowing that other people have overcome it and can, and that you can look back on your life and think, was that really necessary? Not in such a way that you get mad at your friends or your parents or your teachers, but in just such a way that you sort of see it for what it was and forgive them and go, I bet they'd have done better if they knew. I wish they had known what we know now. I wish it had been a little different. It would have been cool. So see it, think, good for me. It would have been nice. And then let it go. Don't crawl back in that hole and live there. Some people do that. It's not good. So you have these kids, and you want to encourage them to do things without thinking, Is it okay for me to play with this? Is it okay for me to think this? Is it okay for me to like this? What you can do for them is just go, that is cool, about a bunch of stuff. If they come and say, look what I found in the yard, don't go, well, put it back in the yard, it's dirty. Say, well, what is it? What is it? Let's look. Where'd you find it? If you're interested in what they're interested in, for one thing, it might be really interesting. Even if they say, I found it in the yard, it's cool, and you go, where is it? They'll go, it was over there. You might go out there and dig up the rest of the cow. They might not care anymore, but you know, you might think it's really interesting. Well, like my kids kept on saying, listen to Flight of the Conchords. And I'm going, yeah, mate, whatever, I will someday. And then they kept on and kept on and kept on. And now I'm like, more Flight of the Conchords. And they're going, well, we'll listen to this other thing now. And I'm not done with Flight of the Conchords. So it's okay that you don't just do it for them and with them. You know, if they find you some cool stuff on the internet or out in the backyard, go for it. Enjoy it. I asked my grandmother, my dad's mom was a little younger. It's my mom's mom. I asked her one time, did you ever ride in a covered wagon? And she said, how old do you think I am? Well, I'll tell you how old she was. She was born in like 1898. So, but I was scared. I was embarrassed. And so I thought, oh, that was a stupid question. And so I didn't ask my other grandmother, and it turned out she did. So when you answer a kid's question, try to leave it open for them to still ask someone else. And I did get to talk to her a little bit. They didn't go, you know, like the cartoons. They didn't go from St. Louis to Oregon or anything really picturesque. They went from West Texas to southern New Mexico, which seems like it's just across the border, but it depends where in West Texas you are. So they settled near Carrizozo, and my great-grandmother's buried there. So now I know a lot of stories, and it's cool to know. But yeah, she did go in a covered wagon. And then after a while, her mom died, and they all went back to Texas in the same wagon. Another friend of ours who was unschooled asked his mom, so tell me about when Tylenol was invented, thinking he was basically saying, did you ever ride in a covered wagon? And she said, well, before that, there was just aspirin and Buferin, and he was embarrassed because he was just hoping to say something stupid, right? That she would go, oh, you obnoxious kid. And she actually knew the answer. A lot of people think of learning because of school, I suppose, or because of all of the people who have said that's stupid. What are you thinking? Who asked you? You're just a kid. They think that learning is being given a big list of important information and memorizing it. And that learning looks like a list that starts and ends of all the muscles in your foot or all of the different kinds of triangles or something. And that knowledge has a beginning and an end, and you either know it or you don't know it. That is very harmful to unschoolers. I'm going to quote myself. I hardly ever read, but sorry, I'm going to read. It's one paragraph from an article called Late Night Learning. And it was about a night when my kids were all awake and energetic, and we started talking about Renaissance art and Ninja Turtles. But part of that was, it seems lately that more and more people want to know exactly how to unschool, but the answer is not what they expect. Looking back at these stories in light of others like them, the best recommendation I can make is to open up to the expectation of learning. It helps if the parent is willing for a conversation to last only 15 seconds or to go on for an hour. Remember that if your unit study is the universe, everything will tie into everything else, so you don't need to categorize or be methodical to increase your understanding of the world. Every bit is added wherever it sticks, and the more you've seen and wondered and discussed, the more places you have inside for new ideas to stick. A joyful attitude is your best tool. We've found that living busy lives with the expectation that everything is educational has made each morning, afternoon, and evening prime learning time. So how learning works when you're thinking of connections is, if you're thinking, oh, that reminds me, there it is. You just hooked something to something else, and inside yourself there's a little trail. And it will be there for a long time. And if you forget about it, someday it'll come back. So inside your head, you've just made another connection. SAT tests used to have analogies. It would be like puppy is to dog as kitten is to what. But they took those out, and I think that's a shame because I think that's one of the highest levels of thought, is to look at things in terms of what they're like and what they're not like. But in school, I think they wounded, scarred some people with those comparison contrast writings. Compare and contrast, blah and blah. And then it just gets creepy because you have to write a paper and then they're going to read your paper and say, wrong, that was stupid. But if you do it just for fun, you know, which Ninja Turtle is most like which Power Ranger, or is whatever, silly thing like that. Why do I keep thinking that Kirby from Nintendo is the same as Jigglypuff? Just because they're fat and pink and Kirby used to like them? I don't know. You know, but it's not important to know. It'll never be on an SAT test. But philosophically speaking, you're doing the same thing the school used to want you to do with compare and contrast, and it's the same thing that the SATs wanted you to do with how is this like that. And so playing with that is fun. If your kids are ever interested in playing with that, go with that, because that can be really fun. Which character in one novel is similar to a character in another novel? There's some stuff on the internet where they take Star Wars and rewrite it as Harry Potter, stuff like that. It's funny, crazy stuff. So even though that seems worthless and stupid, what it does is it runs your brain through its paces. It's like a test pattern. It's like, run this entire story through another story. And it uses all kinds of visual and logical and mythological knowledge that you have. Can never hurt. Like, how is a Zen garden like an Etch-a-Sketch? That should be on the SATs. How is a Zen garden not like an Etch-a-Sketch? You can take that one home and think about it. But that's all it takes. So when you have those connections, it's easier for you to make another connection. And it's hard to learn something you've never heard in your life at all. If someone came in here right now and spoke a language that not one of us in this room had ever heard spoken at all, we would learn nothing except that, oh, there's something I didn't know. You know, that's about it. If they stop and speak to us in English about where it's from and how many people speak it and how they learned it and that sort of thing, told us some stories we would learn, but just hearing it, you wouldn't have anything to connect it to. That person in the doorway is my middle son, Marty. Ah. Who's sneaking in. In the schedule, there are some pictures like this, which I won't go through because I brought them to you, but these are fun to play with little kids. You can just do it straight math, or you can do it with what is a lizard? How many different things can a lizard be? And I just said lizard because I have two dead ones in a jar in the room that I'm going to put out tonight. If you want to look at dead lizards, come by at the family fair. If you don't want to look at dead lizards, just say no dead lizards. I'll have books for sale, but you don't have to look at the dead lizards. You do want to look at the dead lizards?
Okay.
I also have a magnifying glass, and I have a dead black widow spider. Poor guy. Took it 5 or 6 days. Which was longer than it would have been. If I hadn't planned to bring it here, it would have taken it half a second. Okay, thinking and knowing. I want to talk about knowing, which starts with a K. There's a word, real old word, ken, K-E-N, which means to know, to remember, to connect. So way back, this is one of those cavemen days that in a lot of the Indo-European languages, there's something that goes no, and it has to do with cognition and knowing and knowledge and kenning. So that's what you wanted to have for learning. You want to know. You don't want to learn it. You just want to know it. So bypass the whole teaching learning thing and just go for what do you know? You add some more stuff in there? Now what do you know? So it's okay to think, I just want my kids to know things. And it doesn't happen magically. It happens because you live a rich life, you answer their questions, you show them cool stuff you found in the yard, and you go look at my lizards through a magnifying glass. This morning, Jeff said was talking about the difference between looking at through a telescope and through a funnel, and I think a lot of people were thinking he was looking in the big end of the funnel to the little hole. So that was interesting, too. You know, if you're going to talk about looking through a funnel, you're going to have to specify. Did you look through the little end or the big end? So with cognition, it will be different with different people, and you need to be a little specific within yourself. Not, you don't have to tell people what you're learning, and you don't have to try to tell them what they're learning. Once this pump is primed, once learning is happening all the time at your house, you won't have to wonder whether it happened. And we have a piece of evidence for this, a little experiment that we've done twice, which is Learn Nothing Day, where we challenged everyone to do just one day of learning nothing. So you don't feel guilty about those days. Sometimes people say, well, I don't think they learned anything today. And I said, really? You guys want a day without learning? Okay. I think you have 185 days of that coming, according to the state. You know, you're supposed to learn for 180 days and have 185 days off, right? Don't worry about those 185 days. You only have to learn just a little under half the time. So we set up this Learn Nothing Day as an experiment, and no one has ever succeeded. they all fail. And in that failure, they relax totally about the other 364 days. But back to cognition, it kind of reminds me of ignition. You know, something gets started. And so cognition is thinking, and it's one of those fancy Latin words for thinking, but when you recognize, when you recognize something, it's like, oh yeah, I knew that. I see it again. So it's cool to see the cognize and recognize too and realize it is just another form of thinking. So when does that thinking turn to learning? And that's right at the edge where you, inside yourself, connect something to something else. You guys could tell me how San Diego is importantly connected to Albuquerque, but I don't have it. It's not in me. You might have an Albuquerque-San Diego connection, maybe because you've never been here, now you met me. I don't know what it's going to be. It's none of my business. But you can't make me have one. You can't tell me what's important for me to know because you don't know what I already do know. But you might just tell me some totally off-the-wall story about your grandfather, and I might go, oh my gosh. He went to school where my dad did, or, you know, and I will make my own connection. So inside me, it'll be a big, flashy story, and inside you, it was just a little thing. Let that happen with your kids. If you don't understand why they're excited about something, don't worry about it. If they don't understand why you're excited about something, it'll hurt your feelings at first, but try to get over it. What if is a really good learning tool, and a what if is sort of the basis of science fiction and a lot of fiction, a lot of TV shows, a lot of movies. What if there is this guy who lived in a town and he thought it was the real world, but it wasn't the real world, and then he found out when he was grown. And that's what the Truman Show's about. So if your kids are making up what ifs, let them do that. Help them out. You know, what if I could fly? What if this? What if that? Talk about it. How did I get here? How do you think I got here? I didn't walk from New Mexico. Well, that was cheating that we had an airplane. But what if you could fly? It wouldn't hurt to think about it.
Jump and then
open your arms like a wing. Open your arms like wings? Yeah, well, a lot of people have tried that. Try from a chair, not from the roof. But there's a story about a guy who made wings with wax. You could look it up later when you're older if you care. What if Hitler had won is a big one. There are a lot of books about that. You know, what if Lincoln had not been assassinated? What if Elizabeth I had gotten married? And all those trails are worth going down because they were close. You know, it could happen. There's this little card game, a table game called Chrononauts, and it's a timeline game where you set down all these years and things that happen, and then you turn one over, and that will change history. And then when it's your turn, you turn something over, and it changes history. And I heard Kirby describing that to his grandmother, who plays bridge, so she's no total slouch at games, but she's kind of getting old to learn anything new like Chrononauts, and some of that stuff happened after her time, honestly. some of it was news to her. And Kirby explained it so clearly, and it was so confusing. But those kinds of games, even though it's not real history, it was like John Lennon didn't get assassinated, so he was elected to Congress, so they legalized marijuana. Stuff like that. You know, just, is it important? Did it happen? Is it true? No. But that doesn't keep kids from learning history, and doesn't keep them from seeing that those sorts of instances, like there was an advertisement in National Lampoon, some people will get this joke and some people won't. That's fine. I'm prepared for that. I'm looking around. I think six of you will get this joke. There was a Volkswagen Bug upside down floating in the swimming pool, which is a reference to an earlier Volkswagen Bug commercial of one swimming right side up in a swimming pool. And it said, if Ted Kennedy had been driving a Volkswagen, he'd be president today. So just getting that joke or explaining that joke has a lot. It's a lot about history and law and politics. And it's okay if you don't get jokes, but that's what learning is about. It's about understanding when you can connect two or three things together and it's funny. When I taught junior high, my standard answer to why do we need to know this was, so you'll get jokes. Because they couldn't argue with that. When you associate things with other things, it's not always just a story about somebody making out in a car in front of a... What was that place called?
Extraordinary Desserts.
Sometimes it's the smell or an emotion. A lot of my memories are emotional. I can be at a campout or something, and I won't remember anything like who was there or exactly where we were unless somebody was really happy, really sad, really, you know, something dramatic came of an emotional nature. I have another friend whose memories are scent. If he smells something, he'll tell you where he first smelled that, what they were eating, who was there, what they were wearing, because it just comes, bing, like a big picture. So that's worth remembering about memories, too, is that they're not all going to be verbal. It's not all going to be about words. Some of it's going to be about physical sensation. And that's another kind of learning. If you think about your first pet, you probably have memories of the house that he lived in and the food and where you got him and what happened to him and stuff. So it's not just what species was it and how much did he weigh. It's not going to be the scientific kind of measurable stuff. It'll be personal stuff to you. I used to have no association in the whole world with Delaware. And Keith and I used to try to name the states for fun when we were young and single and poor, and it's like a race to name all the states, and we'd all very often leave out Delaware. It's like we didn't know anybody there, and see, it was easy. But the places we lived, the places we'd been, those go on the list really quick. So that's worth knowing, too. If you think that your kids are not at all aware of Delaware or something, try to sneak it in. Leave something lying around. Maybe they'll get an association, maybe they won't. Now, that's not to say fill in all the gaps in their learning, because I don't think there's any such thing as filling in all the gaps in anybody's anything. But it means if you're aware that they don't know anything about lizards, bring them over to my table tonight at the family fair. Could you guys find her something softer to bang? Because I'm afraid it's distracting. Thanks. One on the carpet, I wouldn't hear that. So each idea and concept and person and song and motion and dance, everything that you can think of has personal associations for you. If you can't think of it, then it doesn't have personal associations for you. That's just a definite thing. You don't have to catalog the things you know or that you remember or that you've seen, because that's what your brain is. That's that catalog. You have an incalculable mass of connections. Just, we would never remember them all. And there's some stuff that you know that you haven't probably thought of for 20 years. One time Holly said, sing me a song you've never sung since I was born. That was a cool question. You might try that on the way home. Think if there's some song that you have never sung to your kids. Because somehow you're going to start filing. Somehow in your head you're going to think, okay, well, what songs did I used to know that I might have for some reason not thought of lately? And it was fun, and I did think of something.
Mouse songs.
Mouse songs?
Yeah.
You're too young to play, kid. You have to get old enough to forget some stuff before you can play games about forgetting stuff.
But I play games I have old.
Check back with me in 30 years. Hard to believe there's any such thing when you're little. So what you know can be added to or amended, but it probably can't be deleted. So even if you want to get rid of the voices of your grandmother saying, that's stupid, you have no horse sense, blah, 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 you can't take it out, but you can shush it down. You can say, thank you. And she'll still be there, but I think every time grandmothers have said something mean to a kid, it's because somebody said something mean to them. Somebody who was dead before you were born said something mean to them, and they saved it up and spewed it back out at you one day. So, very important to remember, don't fill your kid up with stuff that will come popping out later after you're dead. That's easy. Be careful what you say to your kids and to your partner, because those things build up. And there are a few things, I don't want to recite them, and I don't want you to think of yours very hard, but there are a few things that Keith has said to me and a few things I've said to Keith that I would love to take back. I just wish that those words had never been spoken. Very hurtful, little, not important, just little, shouldn't have said. So, same thing with kids. I have memories of things my parents said to me, my mom mostly, that I just wish she had not said, I wish I had not heard, and I can't undo it. So, I can't undo that. I can prevent giving my kids too much that they can't undo. I won't totally succeed. So, a young friend of mine who's like the age of Marty and Kirby, more or less, said, he was asking me for personal relationship advice, and we're talking about stuff, and I said how important it was to be mindful of all your thoughts and your words. Don't be negative. Be sweet. Be helpful. And he said, nope, I never want to be in a relationship where I have to guard my words. Yeah, well. And the answer to that is, well, you're not going to be in many of them. Children learn about parents from the things the parents say. And they learn from the way the parents treat them, look at them, roll their eyes, or don't, or go, tss. Don't never underestimate the power of because people hear it, they see it, they know what you meant. And so just because it's not evidence in court, I don't know that lawyers very often go, and then she went, but it's evidence in child-parent relationships. Some people do try to encapsulate their problems and forget them, and you can try to do it. You can go, well, that was when I was young and stupid, and I've apologized profusely and given the guy $500, so maybe he'll forgive me now. That works with spouses sometimes. Laptop computers, you know, stuff like that. It's worth trying. but there is a good reason for analyzing them and going through, and that is so that you don't do it again. So you need to learn about yourself in ways that make you a better unschooling parent, that make you a better any kind of parent. If you say, well, yes, I did that, but I'm not going to think about it, it's done now, you're likely to do it again. If you go, why did I do that? What was I thinking? Was I just tired or hungry or what? What was my problem? Oh, it reminded me of that time my sister did this and that. So go ahead and think that through, not to dwell on it, not to beat yourself up, but to untangle it like, you know, your grandma's old jewelry box with all the necklaces all tangled up. Untangle it, lay it out, and go, okay, I see it now. And try not to do it the next time. So some people just walk through the world, they go through the world like an earthworm. You know, it's like, that's behind me, it's behind me, I can't even see it. But if you do that, you're going to keep on going through the same old dirt. Happiness helps learning. So if you are happy, joyful, interested, cheery, you will learn better than if you're sad, cranky, tired, kind of have an imploding headache, and you're sighing, and you're wishing you're somewhere else. That's not a way to learn. So try to set your nest up at home so that your kids can learn by making it happy and surprising and joyful and funny. And connections between the parents and children will help connections between you and other people and your children and other people and you and information. It seems stupid. It seems like I'm overstating the possibility of having a good relationship with your kids, but I don't think I am. If you can figure out how to have a really good relationship with your child, that will help you be a better friend to people you haven't even met yet, or to your old friends, or to your neighbors. Because you will have thought through what crushes people, what lifts people up. And you've become better. You've practiced at doing the uplifting things and not the crushing things. Makes you a nicer person. And when you're a nicer person, it's easier for you to do well at work and be nice when the line at the grocery store isn't going fast. It doesn't help me talk to the guy about the cable, the internet being down. I can't do that. So that for that, I ask Kirby or Holly's ex-boyfriend, because they can sit on the phone and be polite for an hour, which is what I can't do. So also know your strengths. If you're not the parent who can take a kid to the doctor when he's sick and maybe wait there for an hour and a half while they tell you something stupid, let your husband take him. You know, let your wife take him. Get your friend who's a nurse to take him. If you know that you are doomed in this situation to tell the guy, I can't believe they pay you to do this, then get someone else to call and say the internet's down. So, yes. I can't drive overnight. Keith can. Marty can, apparently, because Marty drove here. So if you can't drive overnight, don't say, oh, I'll drive us to San Diego. Find somebody who can. And same with your kids. Don't try to make them do what they can't do, and don't try to do what you can't do. It will make a huge amount of difference in their confidence and in you and their confidence in themselves. How much time do I have? I'm supposed to know this myself. Ten minutes, I guess. Clarity and thought. I went and did the chat. I tried to do the chat while I was listening to Jeff because I'm a big multitasker, but there was no internet, which crushed me. And so I went up to the room and I did the second half of the chat. It was really good. It was really interesting. And someone wrote, did anyone else feel like when you really started to get unschooling that a fog kind of lifted and you saw things more clearly? And I said, yeah, everybody. That's how it is. That's why they call it clarity. Because first you're all kind of muddled and confused and you can't tell if you're going the right direction. And then after a while, it's like, how could I not have seen that? It's right there as big as day. So yes, when you start to get it more, a fog kind of lifts. And then after a while, some more fog lifts that you didn't even know was there. You thought it was clear before, and now it's even more clear. So gradually and incrementally, you get there. And all you have to do to get there is not take too many steps in the wrong direction. If you take a few steps in the wrong direction, if you sit down and take a nap, that's fine, you know, but don't just live in the wrong direction. Don't say, well, I tried unschooling for a week, and then I quit doing that, and then I bought a curriculum, and then I put my kids in school, and then I bought another curriculum, and then I tried unschooling for a day, and then that's not trying anything. That's not even trying school. That's just kind of spinning your wheels. So decide where you want to go, and then make most of your steps in that direction. That's it. So clarity and thought have to do with analogies and correlations and just figuring out what's nonsense and what isn't nonsense. If you are in the habit of avoiding things that are hard to think about, unschooling might be hard. One woman came into a chat, well, not a chat, into a message board where you leave emails for people and they come back and answer later. And she, what?
Old school.
Old school, yeah, like old women do. And, I don't think you guys have very many philosophical discussions by I don't even think it was called, yeah, text. Holly's laughing at me. For the record, I would like to state, Holly's laughing at me. And she said, she was really upset about something, really all upset about something, and it might have been the woman who said that when there are shoes hanging on a wire, that's a crack house. That's how they mark crack houses. They hang shoes on a wire. And I said, I think that's where a junior high boy threw his friend's shoes over a wire. And she said, no, because my daughter told me that. And my daughter never lies. And I said, okay, I'm not saying she was lying. I'm saying maybe she was misinformed, or maybe she's, you know, she believes that. But I don't think crack houses would buy a pair of shoes and throw them over a wire to mark their house. But we couldn't get her to back down. It's like, you're calling my daughter a liar. You're calling me a liar. It's like, no. So if it wasn't that discussion, it was one just about that worthwhile. And it was worthwhile because the people who were not in the middle of it are going, oh my gosh, I believe some things that are that crazy just because somebody I trust told me. So I said, you really need to be critical in your thinking. And she said, oh, now that makes me really mad because that sounds so schoolish, critical thinking. I didn't know what to say at that point. So if you're so school wounded that you don't want to do anything that they had to do in school, like, you know, or because your mom told you to use toilet paper, you're never going to use it again, you know, that's a personal problem. You need to probably try to sort out what actually had a purpose from what was just arbitrary rule. Because some things are good, you know, like at school, you know, don't tear the books up and eat the covers. You know, if you're going to eat anything, eat the pages. You know, there are just some things that you don't want to do just to be reactionary. So to be reactionary, she wanted to hear and think nothing about critical thinking. What were we doing being so schoolish? So critical thinking also doesn't mean being critical, like that sucks. Some people, I think, are critical moviegoers. They go to the movies and go, that sucked. I could have done that. I could have done better than that. Movie's stupid. Not that kind of critical, but critical where you go, okay, wait, does this make sense? Why don't the crack dealers hang out something cheaper than a nice pair of tennis shoes? So if you can think about a ridiculous, crazy situation like that and get through it logically and decide how and why you decide things, just because somebody's absolutely scrupulously honest and they tell you something doesn't mean they're right. I gave people the wrong directions one time in the middle of the night for my Dunkin' Donuts. I sent them to Taos and they were trying to go to Las Vegas. Like, oops. I was embarrassed, but I couldn't call him back, you know? So if you see these situations and you can analyze one of them once, it'll be easier the next time, and by the time you're up to the 50th or 100th one, you'll be a whiz at critical thinking, and you won't even remember that it was something they tried to teach you in school. There are a lot of logical analogy pitfalls, and most of research about education is full of those, and I'm not going to go into that very much, but, you know, they say, well, these kids who were getting F's watched a lot of TV, so therefore, you know, those sorts of things. When kids are in a classroom with fewer than 20 people per class, they do better on this, therefore. So be careful of those therefores. There are always lots of other questions to ask. And when people use that argument, my comeback is usually my grandmother drank milk and now she's dead. And I don't even stick around for them to go, what? So beware of correlations.
Die with milk.
Yeah. most of my webpage and a lot of that book is about choices, making choices, enabling other people to make choices, and seeing that you do have choices. Anytime, some earlier in here, somebody said had to, and then somebody jumped on us. Like, anytime you hear anybody telling you that they have to do something, or that you have to do something, or if you hear your kid tell, if you hear yourself tell your child you have to do this, rephrase it. Just rephrase it. Maybe it's pretty close to true. Like, you have to turn right or you will run into that truck. You know, I mean, go ahead and yell, I have to turn at that point. But in most cases, it's not a have to. It's a, if you want to not hit that truck, then you should choose to veer to the right. Just be careful with your thoughts, because your thoughts are affecting your words are affecting your children. And so it's not enough that I'm trying to tell people not to talk about teaching. I'm telling them not to try to think about teaching. So maybe that's why they think I'm mean, because I'm always telling them what to think. But I don't mean you have to not use that word. I mean, if you want to unschool successfully and not hit that big truck, you might want to think about learning instead of teaching. That's all I'm saying. I just didn't want to say it so slowly because there was this oncoming truck. So that is the end of my talk for now. Thank you very much.